Brewers battle the Reds. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. It's the Brewers and the Reds again tonight in Milwaukee. The Crew losing last night to Cincinnati 3-1. A big night for the Reds' Gavin Lux, who grew up in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Lux with a pair of doubles and scored the go-ahead run. Brewers pitcher Quinn Priester allowed all three runs on 9 hits in 5 innings pitched. It's the first time in 19 games the Brewers lost while Priester was on the mound. Pat Murphy on the right-hander's performance.
I thought he did a fine job, gave us 5+. A sinker, he didn't have control of his sinker early. He's had that long layoff. He's not used to that, so who knows how that affected him.
College football, the Badgers face Michigan in Ann Arbor next weekend. They have a bye week this week. NFL, the Packers headed to Dallas to play the Cowboys tomorrow night on Sunday Night Football. Green Bay has now won 6 in a row there, including Super Bowl 45. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear tonight, a low in the upper 50s. Sunshine for Saturday, a high in the mid-70s. And more sun on Sunday, highs again in the mid-70s. Staying dry next week, we'll see temps even warm into the 80s. Right now it's 61.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we will get a recap of all the weekend news with Civic Media News Director Sholly Pittman. And we're going to talk about PFAS in Wisconsin Ducks with David Drake. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11. The Todd Allbaugh Show.
We don't always agree politically, but Bill McCosh.
Thanks for having me. You want to talk Brewers first?
It's been a really special season, and it's not whether you're wearing red or blue hats. It's yellow and blue.
How do you come together in politics? This is one of the ways.
Yeah.
Find some common ground and then expand on that. And right. Then you got to listen to the other side.
Our neighbors are not our enemies. We can disagree politically, but still find ways to bring our community together.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Where working people come to talk. It's the Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join me for an honest approach to the issues American working families care about. No talking points, no focus groups. Get ready for a heavy dose of democracy, fairness, grit, and no apologies. It's current affairs from a working class labor perspective. Facts are center, science is real, and everyone gets a seat at the table. The Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people, this is the Maggie Dawn Show.
I wouldn't get on this program with all of you fine folks every day and talk about how to do that through voting and through speaking out. I'm here with you every day.
Get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
What are you doing as an elected official? You have no business in an elected office.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
Go Pat, go.
Go Pat, go.
Thank you for having me.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth. Here is Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody, and happy Friday. We've made it through another week together. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, where we're coming to the end of week one of Civic Media's multi-state text to win, go for the green and gold contest. We're going to be giving away some great prizes during this contest. It lasts until next week of Friday. Every day you can be entered to win by texting in the word of the day in the 5 o'clock hour on this fine program. And so we're going to want to keep you around until at least 5 o'clock, and if not through the entire show. We'll be dropping that word again in that 5 o'clock hour. You can text that in via the app, get entered to win one daily prize of either $200 or gold jewelry, as well as two tickets to Green Bay versus Minnesota on November 23rd at home. That's a noon game, plus a gas card to get you there and back. But let's start with some news today. Republican gubernatorial candidate Bill Berrien is out of the race. His abrupt departure comes just days after the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reported that Berrien, who branded himself as a conservative leader who stands up for family values and claimed that transgender individuals are engaged in, quote, radical social experimentation, it was revealed that he was following a transgender porn star on Medium.com named Jiz Lee. He was also following publications called Sexography and Polyamory Today, links that he scrubbed after being contacted by the Journal Sentinel. Jiz Lee had this to say on Blue Sky yesterday. It's okay to follow trans porn stars. It's okay to read articles about sex and relationships. What's not okay is the hypocrisy of backing forceful legislation that restricts what people, trans or otherwise, can do with their bodies. That is shameful. This leaves Trump butt kisser Tom Tiffany and Washington County Executive Josh Shulman in the race. Stay tuned here. Maybe more bombshells are in the offing. Who knows? But Berrien is out. In other state news, the FBI and U.S. Immigration Customs Enforcement arrested 21 people in Manitowoc County yesterday. The arrests were announced by the FBI Milwaukee office on X, also known as Twitter, in the before times. According to the FBI, 21 of the people arrested all were suspected to be in the country illegally. A number of them, or perhaps all of them, were waiting. They were picked up in a Walmart parking lot, and they were apparently dairy workers gathering for carpooling. Interesting. Wonder who's going to be milking the cows, or who did milk the cows yesterday at the farms that those workers were destined for. All of this, of course, bringing a recollection of yesterday's show at the Reisinger Family Farm in Spring Green, Wisconsin. And I wanted to point out what Donald Trump had to say yesterday about the impact of his tariff terror on farmers. Take a listen to this.
Money that we made, just to get off the subject for a second, we're going to take some of that tariff money that we made, we're going to give it to our farmers who are for a little while going to be hurt until it kicks in, the tariffs kick into their benefit. So we're going to make sure that our farmers are in great shape because we're taking in a lot of money.
Was that Donald Trump just admitting that his tariff terror is hurting farmers? I think it was, folks. I think that's exactly what he just said. Now, to make matters worse, in the last couple of days, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent has said across social media that he and Donald Trump have been speaking extensively with Argentine President Javier Milei about plans to financially support Argentina to stabilize its economy. The Treasury is apparently negotiating for a $20 billion swap line with Argentina's central bank. And in advance of that swap line worth $20 billion, Argentina also suspended its export taxes this week, including on soybeans. What does that mean? It makes Argentine soybeans cheaper relative to American soybeans, which are now subject to these massive Trump tariffs, right? And it is absolutely killing the American soybean farmer. In parts of the Midwest, the majority of soybeans get routed to ports in the Pacific Northwest to be shipped overseas to places like China. But there are far, far fewer shipments of soybeans actually being exported right now. Literally, soybean supplies are piling up in these ports, which is driving down the cost of soybeans, meaning there's a glut in the market. Brian Rensinger explained this yesterday a bit. And since its peak in 2022, soybean prices have fallen about 40%. The American Soybean Association has said that the soybean prices are falling right in the midst of the fall harvest, that American farmers are hurting, that this is not a good situation for American farmers. He said this, quote, the farm economy is suffering while our competitors supplant the United States in the biggest soybean import market in the world. And just in case you didn't know, soybeans account for approximately 20% of the United States cash crops receipts in 2024. It's worth about $47 billion, according to data from the USDA. This is terrible. we now have both Argentina and Brazil effectively replacing American soybean farmers in the international market. And by the way, here in Wisconsin, about 68 of our, maybe not 68, is 62-ish of our 72 counties produce soybeans. Millions of bushels of soybeans are produced in the state of Wisconsin. Those farmers are going to be hurting as well. They have none other to thank than Donald Trump. Also in national news, Jimmy Kimmel is back on ABC affiliate Sinclair officially tonight. Sinclair had refused to put Jimmy Kimmel back on the air, even when Disney, the owner of ABC, said that it would do so. This is quite a development given the last couple of weeks. Moving on, we have a national government shutdown looming, and I want to take a moment on this. Because what is being done by Donald Trump and the MAGA regime related to the government shutdown is unconscionable. Democrats have said that they will sign on to a government funding bill if one thing happens. They have one demand. Just one. Not a whole series. Just one thing. They want the Affordable Care Act tax credits refunded. They don't want them to expire. These are the subsidies that make insurance affordable for millions of Americans, small business owners. Oh yes, farmers, farm workers, retirees who have yet to qualify for Medicaid, folks that are working for employers that don't provide health insurance. Millions of Americans, all Democrats want is to ensure that these millions of Americans come November 1st don't have sticker shock. We've been talking about this extensively on this program, the fact that we've got nonprofit insurance carriers dropping out of the ACA like flies here in the state of Wisconsin because their risk levels are going up because the subsidies are getting pulled out, and that means more people will go underinsured or without health insurance at all, which means their risk pools will have more people. Fewer people that are more sick, which makes their insurance pools more expensive. That is the Democrats' demand. Please put the tax credits back in place for the Affordable Care Act. Have those subsidies there for people that need them. We want Americans insured. That's what the Democrats' demand is. Donald Trump's response is, I won't meet with Democrats. I won't even talk to them. And to make matters even worse, House Speaker Mike Johnson is doing what? He's sending the House of Representatives home. They're taking vacation days on September 29th and 30th. These are the 2 days right before the shutdown would take effect. Are you freaking kidding me? And to make matters even worse, today, reports from numerous news agencies are that Donald Trump and Russ Vought, the Darth Vader of the Trump administration, are planning massive layoffs if the government shuts down. Make no mistake, ladies and gentlemen, if you or someone you know gets laid off by Donald Trump because he refuses to meet Democrats in the middle to make sure that healthcare is affordable for Americans through the ACA that depend on the Affordable Care Act for insurance for them and their families, there will be no one to blame but Donald Trump. This is effectively hostage taking. Donald Trump and the MAGA regime is taking the entirety of federal government and federal employees hostage. What defines hostage taking and demanding ransom? It's that the kidnapper doesn't care about the person that they just kidnapped. For all they care, they can die. That's what gives a kidnapper leverage. That's what forces the folks that care about the person that's been kidnapped to fork up the money. That is exactly what the MAGA regime has done on mass scale. The hostage here is the entire federal workforce. How dare you, Mr. President? The idea that the President of the United States would play chicken with the entire federal workforce when the only demand for Democrats to continue to fund the government is simply ensure that health insurance remains affordable for Americans through the ACA. That is their only demand. Now, Donald Trump has spoken about shutdowns before, ladies and gentlemen. So I thought it might be helpful to refresh our recollection about who Donald Trump thinks should be responsible if the federal government shuts down. Take a listen.
Who's going to bear the brunt of the responsibility if indeed there is a shutdown of our government?
Well, if you say who gets fired, it always has to be the top. I mean, problems start from the top and they have to get solved from the top. And the president's the leader and he's got to get everybody in a room and he's got to lead. You know, the interesting thing is in 25 years and 50 years and 100 years from now, when the government is, you know, they talk about the government shutdown, they're going to be talking about the president of the United States. Who was the president at that time? Mm-hmm. They're not going to be talking who the head of the House was, the head of the Senate, who's running things in Washington. So I really think the pressure is on the president.
Yeah, the pressure's on the president to make sure that Americans can afford health care, to meet Democrats, to at least talk with them. The pressure should be on the president to tell Mike Pence not to send the House of Representatives on a stinking vacation while the shutdown looms. And let's remember who's going to be responsible for firing all these employees. The head of the Office of Personnel Management, the Darth Vader of the White House, one man named Russell Vogt. And let's remember, Russell Vogt has made no bones about what this is all about. It ain't about efficiency or making the government work better for Americans. It's about breaking the government by making it not work, by stripping it of the employees it needs to function and serve the American people. And we know this because he said it in his own words. This is Russ Vogt in, I think it was like 2023. Take a listen.
We want the bureaucrats to be traumatically affected. We want, when they wake up in the morning, we want them to not want to go to work. Because they are so, they are increasingly viewed as the villains. We want their funding to be shut down so that the EPA can't do all of the rules against our energy industry because they have no bandwidth financially to do so. We want to put them in trauma.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK. Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Does this rash look concerning? It's good to be married to a doctor who said, "What's that thing? Let's go see a doctor now."
Look, I know that Pat married for love, but it's like my grandpa used to tell me, marry him for the money because you can fall in love with him later. I don't care so much about the money. How cool would it be to have my own doctor in bed with me every day to do self-examinations? See, that's all I'm looking for.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Matt Nair on air.
The borders are. Tom Homan was investigated for accepting $50,000 from undercover FBI agents.
50 grand in a fast food bag as a payoff. If Kamala Harris would have accepted a fast food bag full of fast food, it would have been congressional hearings, yes. 24 hours on every network that hated them.
It's corruption palooza, man.
Yeah. Matt Nair on air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Did you know 1 out of 5 adults worry about their mental health? It's Suicide Prevention Month, and talking saves lives. Call 988 anytime for support. A message from the Civic Media Radio Network.
We are the National Park Foundation, and together with you, we're creating a future where every person, every generation, gets their chance at an unforgettable moment. Learn more at nationalparks.org/foundation.
Your local Civic Media radio station is your source for real news and great conversation, plus fun and exciting contests. For a complete list of contest rules, log on WLAKradio.com/contest-terms. As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We're doing a review of the headlines. I'm going to get to the prosecution of Jim Comey in just one moment, but we've got some listeners that want to get in on the action. You too can do that. 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Jack from Merrimack, how you doing, friend? What you got for us?
Well, first of all, every farmer that I know, and I know several, would much rather be farming than not able to sell his crop and being subsidized. That's the first thing. Second thing I want to say is that I thought these tariffs were not supposed to be socialistically subsidizing people, but rather they're supposed to be making up for the trillions that are given away as welfare to the 1%. And finally, it sounds very much like Trump's in a very much of an Argentina first, not America first mode, because he wants to give $20 billion of that tariff money to, guess who? Argentina. So
yeah, it's insane, Jack. And you couple that with the fact that yesterday, Trump announced 100% new tariffs on pharmaceuticals, while at the same time he and the MAGA regime Republicans on Capitol Hill won't talk or meet with Democrats about their single demand to continue to fund the government, which is to allow people to afford health insurance. So you're going to slap 100% tariff on pharmaceuticals, which are already so expensive. People are choosing between food, housing, and the drugs that they need to live. I mean, this is the world on its head. None of this makes any sense to me. Unless you're a billionaire, in which case things are looking pretty good, I'd say. Matt from Middleton, happy Friday to you. What you got for us? Matt, you there? We'll work to get Matt back. Folks, I do want to talk about the Jim Comey prosecution. We've talked about it before. Here's what is going on. Two MAGA loyalist prosecutors in the Eastern District of Virginia refused to prosecute or even attempt to bring an indictment against Jim Comey. They were both forced out. The last one fired last Friday, Saturday-ish. Donald Trump then picks an insurance attorney who's never prosecuted a single criminal case in her life and sticks her in as the acting U.S. attorney or the interim U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Virginia. Her entire qualification, other than being a former Miss Colorado, is that she'll do whatever the president wants, which is to prosecute his political enemies. And she did that yesterday. Filed an indictment, got a grand jury to indict Jim Comey. It's a two-page indictment. It basically recites the statute. Now, what I have heard, there are sources reporting that Lindsey Halligan, the interim U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Virginia, couldn't get any other line prosecutor in her office to sign the indictment. It is only her signature on that indictment. There are also reports that she may have been the one prosecutor to present this case to the grand jury to get that indictment, which is totally unheard of. And it has been confirmed that the prosecutors, the frontline prosecutors in her office who were responsible for this investigation, wrote a detailed and lengthy memo telling her that they did not believe that this was a prosecutable case, that there was slim to no chance of securing a conviction. She proceeded anyways. Now, let's not forget the many, many times that Donald Trump has said that Jim Comey is his enemy. A quick refresher of our collective recollections. Take a listen.
Comey and all this, you know, sleazebags.
Comey lied to everybody.
Brennan. We fired Comey, that fraud.
That phony, crooked Comey.
Comey should hang his head in disgrace.
Comey is a dirty cop.
Comey is a corrupt person.
One of the best things is firing James Comey's ass out of there.
He's a leaker.
Comey, who's the worst?
They lied to Congress many times. You know, Comey and all those guys.
Comey lies and leaks. He's a liar and he's a leaker. Is this guy being looked at? but we're going to straighten it out.
A guy like Comey, who's a sick man. I mean, Comey's a sick man. The one person I did a very good thing in firing was the dirty cop Comey. There's something wrong with him. But it's all coming out, and I love to watch it step by step, day by day.
Comey's a liar and a leaker.
And it goes on and on and on. That prosecution's going nowhere fast. And for all, listen, as far as I'm concerned, Donald Trump should just write Jim Comey a thank you letter, because I don't think Donald Trump becomes president unless Jim Comey decides to tell the world, in violation of DOJ policy in October of 2016, that he's reopened the investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails. Jim Comey did that. Just say thanks, Donald. And just so that we're all very clear about the MAGA obsession with the Russia investigation, it clearly benefited Russian disclosures clearly benefited Donald Trump in 2016. The Inspector General of the Department of Justice and the FBI looked into the origins of that investigation and concluded there was a valid basis for the FBI and the DOJ to investigate possible collusion between Trump's 2016 campaign and Russia. That's the end of the story. That's it. Now, Jim Comey, not going to go down well in history. Bad judgment? Yes. Criminal? Absolutely not. And we should all be deeply concerned when Donald Trump simply fires Republican loyalist MAGA lawyers until he finds the next moron that will prosecute his political enemies with the flimsiest of evidence. The DOJ is now controlled by Donald Trump. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the history of shipping in Wisconsin with two expert guests who have just written a book on the Edmund Fitzgerald. So stay tuned. We're going to come right back. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
Catch Farm Report updates throughout the day from the Midwest Farm Report right here on 107.5 WLAK.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. The superintendent of Des Moines, Iowa Public Schools, Ian Andre Roberts, detained by ICE agents. DHS officials say he was a criminal illegal alien from Guyana in possession of a loaded gun and had a history of weapons charges. Matt Smith, the interim school superintendent.
We stand firm with our community, many of whom are feeling sad, outraged, and helpless. We understand as we too are devastated by the news of his detainment.
Video of an ICE agent pushing a woman at a federal courthouse in New York City going viral. That agent relieved of duties pending an investigation. Sources telling ABC News the FBI has fired a group of agents who were photographed kneeling at a protest after George Floyd's death. EU defense ministers agreeing in Helsinki Friday to develop a drone wall along their borders to better intercept Russian drones, which have already moved beyond Ukraine and into Poland's airspace. You're listening to ABC News.
The Brewers battle the Reds.
Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. It's the Brewers and the Reds again tonight in Milwaukee. The crew losing last night to Cincinnati 3-1. A big night for the Reds' Gavin Lux, who grew up in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Lux with a pair of doubles and scored the go-ahead run. Brewers pitcher Quinn Priester allowed all three runs on 9 hits in 5 innings pitched. It's the first time in 19 games the Brewers lost while Priester was on the mound. Pat Murphy on the right-hander's performance.
I thought he did a fine job, gave us 5+. A sinker, he didn't have control of his sinker early. He's had that long layoff. He's not used to that, so who knows how that affected him.
College football, the Badgers face Michigan in Ann Arbor next weekend. They have a bye week this week. NFL, the Packers headed to Dallas to play the Cowboys tomorrow night on Sunday Night Football. Green Bay has now won 6 in a row there, including Super Bowl 45. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Not sure if you guys remember, I broke that whole Tom Holland getting a mild concussion story last week. Even though it might not seem all that important given what's happening in the world, in the spirit of real journalism, here's a follow-up on his condition. The 29-year-old is just fine and has been released from the hospital. Sony and Marvel are taking precautions in keeping Holland away from the set for a week to fully recuperate. The studios say this will not delay the release of the film. I can't imagine missing a week of grade school because I bumped my head on the swings. Here is a drama thriller to put on your radar. A House of Dynamite is still 2 weeks away from theaters, but generating a lot of buzz. The plot? A missile is launched at the United States, and there is a race to find out who is behind it and what the response should be. The film's directed by Catherine Bigelow, who oversees a hotshot cast, including Rebecca Ferguson and Idris Elba. The film will be available to stream October 24th after a brief, limited theatrical run. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Farm news that impacts you and your community from the Midwest Farm Report throughout your day on 107.5 WLAK.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear tonight, a low in the upper 50s. Sunshine for Saturday, a high in the mid-70s. And more sun on Sunday, highs again in the mid-70s. Staying dry next week, we'll see temps even warm into the 80s. Right now it's 61.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
You know what I'm a sucker for at a Chinese buffet?
Crab rangoons.
Yep. I'll have about four or five of those things.
And they have cocktail weenies, which is a nice delicacy at the Chinese buffet.
You know, I'm trying to think of a buffet I went to that had cocktail weenies.
Who's eating that?
I don't know.
Even if you have a gourmet recipe at home, you're not making cocktail weenies. You're certainly not eating them when you go to the Chinese buffet.
Yeah.
Kind of weird.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
This is Robert Pilot, host of Native Roots Radio. On our show, we talk about Native issues like treaties, protecting Mother Earth, and holding our elected officials accountable. You'll also hear from Turtle Island voices like Arvina Martin, State Representative Heather Keeler, Ruth Anna Buffalo, Dr. Anthony Stately, State Senator Mary Kunish, Robert Lilligren, and Bob Blake. Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome comedian Mike Lucas and director, producer, and founder of Wisconsinology.com, Frank Anderson. Thank God it's Monday. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
The legend lives on from the Chippewa on down at the big lake they call Gitchagumi.
Welcome back, everybody, and welcome if you're just joining me. Some Gordon Lightfoot, a very famous song that if you didn't already know about the Edmund Fitzgerald and that song's familiar to you, that's what Gordon Lightfoot was writing about in that tune. We've got two historians joining me today. They have recently written a book called Wrecked, The Edmund Fitzgerald and the Sinking of the American Economy. I've got with me County Executive of Outagamie County since 2011, Tom Nelson, as well as Professor Jerry Pedair, Professor of History and the Robert S. French Professor of American Studies at Lawrence University in Appleton, Wisconsin. We're going to talk about the Edmund Fitzgerald, this book that they've written, some of the new information that they've uncovered, and what their research tells us about this moment in the American industrial economy. With that, welcome to the program, Professor Pedair and County Executive Nelson.
Thanks for having us on.
Great to be on. Thanks for the promotion from politician to historian. I appreciate it.
Yes. Well, we're going to get to that evolution in your career, County Executive Nelson. But let's just jump in. If you could, in a nutshell, for those that may not be familiar with the sinking of the Edmund Fitzgerald, County Executive Nelson, refresh listeners' recollection. What happened back in 1975?
Well, this is one of the most storied sinkings in the Great Lakes. And what it is it's, of course, the subject of the Gordon Lightfoot song, which we just heard, which has been a staple on radio stations for going on 49 years. And so the ship sank, supposedly under mysterious circumstances. And to this date, there hasn't been final resolution as to why it, in fact, sank. And so over the last 50 years, there have been a lot of people, whether they're shipwreck enthusiasts, Fitzgerald geeks, who've been paying attention to this, friends, family, and so forth, have been searching, trying to figure out why it is that this sank. And I think it's also a mystery why this ship and the story and the legend has captured imaginations, not just in the Midwest, but across the country.
It is a fascinating story in and of itself. Americans, and I think human beings worldwide, have always had a fascination with shipwrecks and the sort of aura, the mystery that comes of this. The Edmund Fitzgerald was a massive carrier that moved iron ore in the Great Lakes, bringing it from ironworks plants to other ports for shipment into the United States. So its particular role in the industrial Midwest was very key, and it was a much beloved ship. Professor Padere, can you tell us why folks in the Midwest, and specifically a lot of Wisconsinites, Michiganders, and Minnesotans, had such an affinity for the Fitzgerald? Its sinking also left a hole in culture. There were so many that the ship was really beloved.
Well, the ship was really a symbol of working class Wisconsin and the working class Midwest. It was, I think, a ship that reflected the sensibilities of the Midwest, the lunch pail, hardworking, no complaints, show up every day and do your job part of the Midwest. And in its own way, it was a brave ship. Now, obviously, a ship doesn't necessarily have a personality, but famously, it was said of the Fitzgerald that the Fitz never backed away from a storm. Okay. Mm. And I think that also is symbolic. It's a tough, hardworking ship that I think went along with the culture of work here in the Midwest and Wisconsin. So that's why it was nicknamed the Fitz in that familiar way.
Yeah, I've talked to some of my family members and most of my family are originally from Wisconsin in the Midwest, and that, Professor Padere, that was exactly their recollection, that it was a symbol. It was sort of a physical embodiment of the spirit of Wisconsin. In other words, tough as nails, won't back down, hardworking, and it was a huge, massive, massive size ship. The evening it sank, the reports were that waves were reaching extraordinary, extraordinary heights, up to 35 feet high. If folks have never been in the middle of Lake Michigan or Lake Superior, you can't see shore, and you might as well be in an ocean when
right,
those storm
right.
systems
you might as
whip
well
up.
Be on an ocean. But you know, on Lake Superior, and you know, Tom and I both learned a lot about the world of maritime by doing work on this book. The waves on Lake Superior are not like the waves on the Atlantic Ocean. The waves on the Atlantic Ocean are much more rhythmic, 1, 2, 3. And I think if you're a ship captain, you can time it. On Lake Superior, you can have what are known as rogue waves that can basically come out of nowhere. And although we'll never know for certain why the Fitz sank, it's quite possible that it got hit by three rogue waves, what they call the Three Sisters, right in a row. Bam, bam, bam. It was already listing forward because the taconite ore was shifting forward and breaking through the hatches. It got hit. It's almost like getting hit by a knockout punch in the last round of a heavyweight fight.
Or three knockout punches at
right,
once.
Yeah.
Anybody that has taken the ferry from the tip of the Door Peninsula to Washington Island and lost their lunch knows a bit of whence you speak, because it is that same weather and tidal phenomena that is so unique to these massive lakes that we all know here in the Midwest. County Executive Nelson, let me ask you, what inspired the book? Why the Edmund Fitzgerald? There's so many incredible stories to tell. What was it, a love of shipping and the mystery of the Edmund Fitzgerald that came from your youth? What inspired the book?
Yeah, I think it was a confluence of things. First of all, I mean, going to my youth, when I was about 7 or 8 years old, my dad on a motorcycle trip took me up to Sault Ste. Marie with my uncle, which is part of the prologue. And so that is really where the seed took formation. And so it was just always in the back of my mind, because when you go to the Valley Camp Museum, you see the list of all the names and you see this lifeboat that's just been ripped apart. And so there's these images, and then the story that just kind of sat with me, this 7-year-old or 8-year-old. So it's always been there. It's also something that I think that, you know, here in the Midwest, it's this special kind of historical event that we can call our own. So all around the country, people know about the Gordon Lightfoot song, but this is something that happened near Wisconsin or in the Midwest. And I think that's what really captures a lot of attention. So that was part of it. The other part of it is being in politics, now being elective officer for about 21 years. One of my biggest interests are labor relations, studies, economic development. And so it was on a campaign, I think it was for lieutenant governor about 15 years ago, that I was talking to some people down in Milwaukee. We're going back and forth, and that's kind of where the concept came, that this was a vehicle that literally and figuratively carried the U.S. economy in the 1960s and 1970s, because there were ships like the Fitzgerald that were paid for by an insurance company in Milwaukee, Northwestern Mutual, and the CEO was Edmund Fitzgerald. That's where it got its namesake from. And the ship would carry taconite ore from the Iron Range in Minnesota and Manitoba down through the lakes, and in this case to Toledo, to the steel mills in Ohio and northern Kentucky. From there, the steel would be used to build more ships, going to Detroit, building cars, machine tools in Minnesota. And you add all those pieces up together, and that's a really big part of the U.S. economy in the 1970s and in the 1960s and the 1970s. And we all know, especially someone like Professor Poder, who is a professor of American history, knows exactly what happened with political economy in the 1960s and the 1970s. The American economy cratered. And so using the Fitzgerald, yes, we're telling the story that you've heard for 49 years, but there's something more here. And that was the goal of this book, that the Fitzgerald was this vessel that literally and figuratively carried the American economy. And just as the economy fell apart in the 1960s and 1970s, so did the ship itself. And so, you know, spoiler alert, the reason why the Fitzgerald sank, and the book will go into detail on this, but what really did the Fitzgerald in was not necessarily the Three Sisters waves or taking on water. What did her in is the ship was not seaworthy. It should never have been out on the lake on November 9th and November 10th, 1975.
Folks, you're listening to County Executive of Outagamie County, Tom Nelson. He was a former member of the Wisconsin State Assembly representing the 5th Assembly District from 2005 to 2011. He was elected again in 2004. He was the only Democrat in that election series to unseat an incumbent Republican. He's joined by Professor Jerry Pader, Professor of History, and the Robert S. French Professor of American Studies at Lawrence University in Appleton, Wisconsin. They have co-authored a book, which I'm about halfway through, guys. I will finish it up over the weekend, called Wrecked, The Edmund Fitzgerald and the Sinking of the American Economy. As you were pointing out, Tom, it is the Fitzgerald stands as a literal embodiment of what was happening in the American economy in that very moment, right? And it occurred to me, you know, being from Milwaukee and knowing what happened to manufacturing jobs in the 70s, coupled with the redlining going back into the 40s and 50s, and really the strife that brought to the middle class, where you used to be able to, with a high school diploma or a GED, getting a family supporting middle class job at Alice Chalmers, at Master Lock, at any one of these large manufacturing companies here in Milwaukee and beyond throughout the industrial upper Midwest. Simply not the case today. Professor Pader, when you put this in historical context, what do you want a reader to take away about what we should be paying attention to, what lessons from the Fitzgerald and from that period of time in the United States and the pain that the middle class really has been experiencing since that period of time. What lessons do you want people to glean from that that apply today?
What I want them, or what we want them to take away from this is a much larger story than just a human tragedy, which obviously it was. It is an economic tragedy story as well, because what is happening in the 1970s, as the Edmund Fitzgerald is sinking, is the American economy is shifting into what we now call a neoliberal mode. What is neoliberalism? It's obviously very complicated, but it basically means low taxes, low spending, low deficits, let the market do its work, pretty much get the government out of the economic system. Now, of course, this sounds wonderful on the surface, but in reality, what it does is it puts a lot of American companies out of business. And one of the things that we're trying to argue for in this book is a return to what we might call managerial economics, not socialism necessarily, but one in which the government plays a role in encouraging economic growth. And in this case, investing in the American shipbuilding industry, which it was not doing in 1975 when the Edmund Fitzgerald sank.
And hence county executives' point that the ship itself was not seaworthy. We're going to dive into those bigger questions about how we move the American economy forward today, these lessons that can be gleaned from my guest book. Again, that book is Wrecked, the Edmund Fitzgerald and the Sinking of the American Economy. We talk about what this means to Wisconsin today and how these gentlemen completed some of their new historical research. Stay tuned. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Tom Tiffany, the Republican congressman representing Wisconsin's 7th Congressional District, has finally made it official. He's running for governor. The election for governor in 2026 is the state's first open race for the office since 2010, and it's sure to invite many candidates to run. And on the Republican side, Tiffany's is the most significant announcement yet. There's a very good chance that he is going to be the Republican nominee for governor at this time next year. If that proves to be the case, it would signify a major shift in the center of power for Republican politics in Wisconsin. For so long, it's been the Wow counties, Waukesha, Ozaukee, and Washington, three of the counties that surround Milwaukee, that have been the Republican stronghold in the state. But if Tiffany is the one on the top of the ticket, it will be the most clear indicator yet of how the party has shifted from more of a suburban one to one where GOP voters are more centered in exurban or rural areas.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
Are unauthorized immigrants eligible for federal Medicaid coverage? No. Unauthorized immigrants are not eligible for traditional federally funded Medicaid health insurance and never have been. A 1996 law also requires most authorized immigrants to wait 5 years for eligibility. 14 states, not including Wisconsin, use state funds to cover unauthorized immigrants. President Trump has proposed cutting federal Medicaid funds to those states, which could drop 1.4 million people from health care coverage. In Wisconsin, Medicaid covers 1.28 million people at a cost of $12.1 billion. I'm Tricia Young for Wisconsin Watch. Fact briefs are bite-sized fact checks of trending claims produced by Wisconsin Watch and GigaFact. Learn more at wisconsinwatch.org.
Hey there, Wisconsin. Tom Hartman here. Democracy is not a spectator sport, so join me each and every weekday right here on Civic Media for the Tom Hartman program from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Covering the news of the day and sharing ways for you to get off the sidelines and get active in your community, because change starts with you. Get involved and tune in to the Tom Hartman program Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. right here on your local Civic Media radio station.
Matinee on Air.
We are delighted to be joined by the Executive Director of the Wisconsin State Cranberry Growers Association. Grant Holly is here.
We account for about 67% of the country's cranberries. And then Wisconsin itself, because the cranberry originated here, makes a product that is really good for the environment. And as we're finding out more and more, it's really good for you. Boy, I sound like a commercial.
Matinee on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. You're not going to want to go anywhere because starting at 5 o'clock, I'm going to be dropping the word to win in the 5 o'clock hour for Civic Media's Go for the Green and Gold Multi-State Text to Win contest. So stay tuned, everybody. You're not going to want to go anywhere. Also, some breaking news. The Supreme Court, just within the last couple of hours, has ruled, at least on an interim basis, to allow President Donald Trump to freeze $4 billion in foreign aid payments that Congress had appropriated last year. This foreign aid is specifically targeted at global health and HIV programs, apparently, saving lives. Not really a huge priority for the Trump administration. This all, again, as we are barreling towards a potential government shutdown on Tuesday night with threats from the Trump administration and Russell Vogt to engage in mass firings of federal workers if the administration, if the government shuts down. So watch this space, folks. We'll continue to keep you updated. But back to my two amazing guests. I've got County Executive of Outagamie County, Tom Nelson, along with Professor Jerry Pader, Professor of History and the Robert S. French Professor of American Studies at Lawrence University in Appleton, Wisconsin. These gentlemen have written a fine book of history called Wrecked, The Edmund Fitzgerald and the Sinking of the American Economy. Again, thank you, gentlemen. I really enjoy books like this that take these moments in history and pull, as we've been discussing, what that moment represents and the lessons that it's teaching us about its present moment. Professor Pader, before the break, we were talking a bit about the changes both in the U.S. economy and Americans' collective understanding of the role of government, I would say writ large, basically since World War II. When we look at what Franklin Delano Roosevelt did and the coalition that he brought together, and the fact that at least in this moment, Democrats have failed to really reassemble that coalition with working people and the understanding that government has a role, not just in making sure air and water is clean and safe, but that our economy is fair, that the middle class is benefiting alongside our corporate owners in the growth that we have seen explosively here in the United States. Again, when we track real wage growth against worker productivity going back decades and decades, it used to be roughly walking in tandem. No more. I refer to that as the breaching of the social contract, right? When the corporate owners do better, the middle class should do better, and we do not have that anymore. Can you talk to me a little bit about that? What do you think might be standing in the way of really rebuilding this coalition? And can you also address the ways that Republicans, especially the MAGA regime now, has really worked to sabotage that to the detriment of both the industrial Midwest, but the middle class writ large?
Well, you know, when I think about that question, I go all the way back to 1944, in the last years of the Roosevelt administration, when Roosevelt, as the head of the New Deal coalition, made what was known as the Second Bill of Rights speech. And what is this speech? Well, I think it's one of the most important in American history, because what Roosevelt is arguing here is, look at our Constitution as it is now. It has all these procedural guarantees, which are great, you know, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, etc. But what I envision, what Roosevelt envisioned, is a Bill of Rights where substantive rights are granted in this Constitution. The right to a job, the right to health care, the right to an education, the right to an income. That was what Roosevelt envisioned in the next stage of the New Deal in the 1940s. Now, of course, he passed away and this did not come to pass, but I still think that that is the goal. At least for Democrats, at least for liberals, to revive that as much as possible. And one of the reasons, one of the many reasons that this has not come to pass is that it is, and I'm not just blaming Republicans for this. I think this is our general political culture. We have allowed cultural issues and social issues to crowd out these economic issues, many of which are divisive and many of which we can have all sorts of opinions on. But what I think opponents of the Second New Deal, that kind of managerial economy, have done is use these social issues, use these cultural issues, sometimes racial issues, to almost take our eye off the ball here, which is really, as the Clinton campaign said so famously in 1992, the economy, stupid.
Yes, the economy is stupid. Again, folks, if you're just joining us, I'm joined by Outagamie County Executive and Historian Tom Nelson, alongside Professor Jerry Pader of Lawrence University in Appleton, Wisconsin. Pardon my hiccup there, gentlemen. Let's drill down on that a bit. Tom, when we look at where we stand, where the Democratic Party stands in this moment, one of the things that I've said often on this program is, it is an irrational thought to think that women, the LGBTQIA community, immigrants, and brown and black folks are the ones with their boots on the neck of the middle class. It simply isn't. Mm-hmm. When folks read your book, Tom, what lessons do you want them to take that can help spur a reinvigorated middle class here in Wisconsin and beyond?
Yeah, there's really nothing, you know, there really is nothing getting in our way. I think that there has been poor to pathetic leadership, local leadership, in the last 40, 50 years, not just Republicans, but also Democrats from time to time. But here in the Midwest is where the modern day labor movement was birthed. And a big part of this is workers need to organize, because the monstrosity and the power wielded by corporations is simply not abetting. And what happened to the crew of the Fitzgerald, that there was a corporation that was negligent, that was not doing what they were supposed to be doing to keep the ship in working order, and other reasons too, is that's the same thing, same phenomenon that's going on even today for other workers in other industries.
Folks, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you, gentlemen, so very much. Professor Jerry Pader of Lawrence University and County Executive of Outagamie County, Tom Nelson. We come back, we talk to State Senator Jeff Smith about the closing of veterans' housing facilities.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. We're learning more about the Defense Secretary's highly unusual meeting Tuesday with several hundred generals and admirals. ABC News senior Pentagon reporter Louis Martinez.
It's going to be a discussion about how to restore the warrior ethos, which has been a common message from Secretary Hegseth whenever he travels to visit the troops, whenever he makes public engagements. That is one of the things that he really focuses on significantly.
It's not a final ruling on the merits, but the Supreme Court has handed another practical win to the Trump administration. The high court's move allows the White House to hold back $4 billion in foreign aid that Congress had approved, but the administration says it shouldn't be spent. The State Department posting on social media that it would revoke the visa of Colombian President Gustavo Petro, who traveled to New York.